From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Still working on St. Paddy's Day, I can tell. Well, that's great, because Paddy Maloney, the founder of the great Irish band The Chieftains, will be here to help us talk about his music and the celebration this week. And I see that in honor of Mr. Maloney, Carl has decided to wear a kilt this
week. That's right, Peter. I have Erin Go Brah.
That's great, Carl, but the kilt is traditionally worn by Scotsmen, not Irishmen.
Who cares? I feel so free and happy. I'll wear this thing on Yom Kippur.
Finally, a use for that plaid yarmulke.
There you go. Well, why don't you all celebrate by giving us a call? The number, 1-888. Wait, wait. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there. This is Fiona Hill.
Fiona. That's like a fine name for the week of St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, Atlanta. How are things in Atlanta then?
They're very nice and warm.
They're very nice. Spring in Georgia. It's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
Summer is hell on earth, but spring is great. Well, welcome to the show, Fiona. Let me introduce you to our panel. First up, it's a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and author of the new book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi.
Next up, it's a woman who will soon be appearing on Discovery's Planet Green cable network this spring, Ms. Faith Saley. Finally, it's a comedian, director, and co-author of the new book, Satiristas, Mr. Paul Prevenza.
Hello, Fiona.
Welcome to the show, Fiona. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, right here, is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yep.
All right. For your first quote, here's the Honorable Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
I never stop whipping.
Ms. Pelosi was constantly whipping people this week to drum up support for what?
The health care bill?
Indeed. Pelosi was whipping liberal Democrats to keep them from bailing out in a bill they didn't think goes far enough. She was whipping conservative Democrats to support it, despite the fact it's totally communist. And she was whipping Dennis Kucinich because it is really fun to whip Dennis Kucinich.
And it worked, though.
Yeah, apparently it worked. Yeah, she whipped him pretty well.
Yeah.
Pelosi announced this week that she was thinking of making health care happen via something called Deem and Pass. Not Deem and Pass. It's a technique that provides cover for taking a vote that might be unpopular. It's one of the many little-known House rules, like the, oh, I'm just holding it for a friend process, the five-second rule, or House Procedure 13.44, the it doesn't count because it was during my sophomore year at Sarah Lawrence rule. Republicans, of course, they went ballistic. They said this maneuver was unprecedented, even though they had done it themselves many times when they were in the majority. They claimed that this was their right because they had called shotgun.
I have a feeling this whole thing's being run by Robert's Rules of Kindergarten.
It may well be. It's been a crazy week. I don't know if you saw the interview that Barack Obama did with Fox News.
What?
Not only was...
What?
Was
huh?
The host kept interrupting him, but also was so obsessed about this demon pass, which he kept calling demon pass. Demon pass. Do you support demon pass? I know. It was like the next thing. It wasn't so much an interview as an attempt at an exorcism.
That's
it was
right.
Really odd.
I'll make your head do that one more time, Mr. President.
I know.
Please. Woo!
All right. Let's move on. Fiona?
Yes?
Here is your next quote.
His reaction when he saw me was just so cute. I mean, he looked like a little kid at Christmas, and I just uttered to him, "You're so hot."
That was a woman named Rielle Hunter. She was talking to GQ magazine about the fateful night she met whom?
It must be Tiger.
You know,
surprisingly enough,
I can think of one man who's really glad you would think that.
Wow.
Yeah. No. This is the
it's
other adulterer in the news.
Another narcissist.
Rielle Hunter was involved with a politician. Does that help? Who I guess not, is the answer.
That really narrows it down.
No idea?
No, I'm blanking.
It's okay. I'll give it to you. It's John Edwards. John Edwards, the former presidential candidate. During her first ever interview, since news of her affair with Edwards became public, Ms. Hunter did not hold back at all. She says she likes John Edwards because he's a visionary man of principle and that he likes her. That's what she said. And he likes her because she's the only person left in America who likes him. But what was really amazing about this interview, which I urge you all to go read, is the photo shoot that goes with it. Ms. Hunter is posing in a bed next to Kermit the Frog, Dora the Explorer, and Barney the Dinosaur in a men's dress shirt, pearls, and panties. We want to know how this came about. Like, Hunter says to the photographer, she says, I want these photos to show America that I'm a serious woman and a good mother. Now, let's get rid of these pants.
Well, not only that, but she's now complaining that the photographer promised
her
that it would only be headshots.
Yes.
Did she not notice the photographer was 20 feet across the room?
Well, she called Barbara Walters, which is what you do when you're unhappy, right?
About pictures without pants.
You call Barbara Walters and say, oh, my God, I'm so horrified. I can't believe about the pictures. I'm mortified. And as you say, she says, I didn't know they'd end
she
up like that.
Tears.
It's like, how was she supposed to know this photo shoot would lead to photographs? She forgot that the camera, you know, adds 10 pounds and subtracts pants.
She calls him Johnny, by the way.
She calls him, she says that's his birth name, Johnny.
And then she also says that this is not his fall from grace, it's his fall to grace, because now he's living his life honestly.
And Grace, on the other hand, says he's great.
Fiona, your last quote comes from a waitress at a Hooters restaurant in Augusta, Georgia.
All the girls were excited for him to come to town. If he happens to fall off the road.
Who was it?
Tiger.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods. Everybody can relax now. Tiger Woods announced he will return to professional golf at this year's Masters Tournament at Augusta. PR experts think that it's a good move for him. It's an event he's won 4 times before. He's comfortable there. It's a private club that can really control the media environment. And since the club doesn't admit women, there will be a limit on distracting temptations. So he has been in rehab for a while, and some of those live oak trees are pretty attractive. That's between him and his horticulturist, Charlie. I don't know what your problem is.
God, is there an antibiotic for Dutch elm disease?
Carol, how did Fiona do in our quiz?
Fiona had 2 correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona, for playing. Take care.
Bye-bye.
I got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paul, as you know, the Pentagon is an open and transparent institution. It's always willing to welcome citizens' helpful ideas.
I go all the time. I wander in. I bring cake.
They're great. Yeah. Well, Stars and Stripes reported this week that one ingenious citizen suggested to the Pentagon that they use what to track down Osama bin Laden?
That they use the Internal Revenue Service.
No. I'll give you a hint. Well, he's smarter than the average paratrooper.
You're kidding.
No.
Yogi Bear?
Yes, what? Bears.
Oh, bears.
Parachuting bears.
Or yogis.
Yeah, or yogis. But bears. Parachuting bears is the answer.
Wow.
The positive.
I don't know why that didn't pop right into my head.
The positives, bears, as everyone knows, have a strong sense of smell. They're great trackers, and we all know they love caves. The negative, from what we've seen so far, bears are notoriously poor skydivers. The would-be military strategist who sent his suggestion into the Pentagon, he was quoted by Stars and Stripes as saying, quote, parachute bears into areas bin Laden might be, train bears to take off parachutes after landing, or use parachutes that self-destruct. The Pentagon has taken with the idea. They're not quite committed to it, but they're starting a pilot program which will rig a predator drone to coat bin Laden with honey.
You know, you mock this idea about the bears, but it can't work any worse than anything else.
That's true. And there is, of course, the constitutional right to arm bears. So.
Bada boom.
Peterson.
Charlie, as you know, the Texas school board often imposes its views, usually conservative, on the textbooks used in that state and often, as it turns out, across the nation. This week, they passed standards that emphasize conservative thinkers and political figures in history and, more surprisingly, eliminated all reference to whom.
Yes, they managed to, and they replaced him, by the way, with Thomas Aquinas. I just want to point this out.
That's very nice of them.
But they eliminated Thomas Jefferson.
From American history, that's
exactly
true. We're not sure why the new standards for American history in Texas will exclude any mention of Thomas Jefferson.
I do.
Well, our guess is that he, of course, is the originator of the concept of a wall between church and
correct
state, which
that's
they're
exactly
against.
Right.
Also, he had long hair like one of those hippies. They're also going to say that Texas won the Civil War all by itself. The Pilgrims landed in Dallas. And that Jefferson High School in El Paso, Texas, named after the Jeffersons on TV.
I can get behind that.
They want to encourage the kids to move on up. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
This is Charles from Memphis.
Hey, how are things in Memphis?
Warmer now.
Yeah, you sound relieved.
Yes, very relieved.
Well, welcome to the show, Charles. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Charles's topic?
Watch 2 episodes of SportsCenter and call me in the morning.
Professional athletes are held up as paragons of strength, vitality, and health, while we schlubs who spend our time watching them are mocked as couch potatoes. But this week, we read about a sports fan whose devotion to his or her team actually saved their lives. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories about life-saving sports fanaticism. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right, let's go. Let's hear first from Faith Saley.
Red Sox lover Colleen Kennedy proved she's a die-hard fan during last Monday's Grapefruit League game between the Bo Sox and the Orioles. The 52-year-old's favorite player, designated hitter David Ortiz, dramatically ended his spring training slump by hitting a 2-run homer in the 3rd inning. Kennedy, who was in the middle of enjoying a City of Palms Park sausage dog, got so excited that she started to choke. I saw Big Poppy's ball headed right at me, and I guess I just forgot to swallow, Kennedy says. Triaging her desire to get her hands on Ortiz's ball over her desire to breathe, she lunged forward, tackled by other fans desperate to make the catch. Turns out that Major League melee saved her life. Kennedy didn't get the prize ball, but the scrum did dislodge her wiener. Shoving her against the stadium railing in an inadvertent mass Heimlich maneuver. She tearfully credits her fellow fans with saving her life. Red Sox Nation is full of such big-hearted people. Her near-death experience hasn't diminished her love for Ortiz. She gushed, "I may have choked, but Big Poppy didn't."
A Red Sox fan is Heimlicht, thankfully, by the crowds in the stand at a game. Your next story of sports to the rescue comes from Charlie Pierce.
Green Bay Packer games have always meant more than football. For example, they have meant civic pride, huge hunks of sausage, projectile vomiting, and hatred for people from Chicago. Now, though, it seems, Packer football may have saved a life. Jim Becker has been a season ticket holder for 58 years. Back in the day when money was tight, Becker would sell his blood for $15 a pint to pay for his family's season tickets. Much later, a doctor discovered that Becker's father had died young from a condition by which the blood retains too much iron, and the only specific for which is to donate blood. Becker's 145 donations probably spared him his father's fate. The only drawback, of course, came during Brett Favre's tenure as the Packer quarterback, when, mysteriously, every December, Becker's blood always went to the wrong person.
A Packer fan gives blood to pay for his season tickets and inadvertently saves his own life. And your last story of someone being saved by sports fanaticism comes from Paul Prevenza.
Since the age of about 7, Dylan Brody of Fargo, North Dakota, has been collecting baseball cards. The collection was Brody's pride and joy, despite his wife's pleas to grow up and get rid of all that junk cluttering the attic. Then the floods came. Unable to evacuate in time, Brody and his family ended up stranded in their attic for over a week before any help could get to them. With no food and little water, they sat amidst 35 years of mint-condition, unopened baseball cards, each package holding a piece of bubble gum, containing enough sugar and carbohydrates to keep the family going until their rescue. "That stupid collection ended up saving our lives," said Dylan Brody's wife. "I only wish I had thought to collect ballpark franks as well."
All right, here are your three stories, if you will. Was it from Faith Saley, a woman watching a Boston Red Sox game whose life was saved when the crowd trying to get a ball gave her the Heimlich maneuver? Was it from Charlie Pierce, a man whose habit of selling his own blood to pay for his Packers season tickets saved him from an early death? Or from Paul Prevenza, a family that survived a flood by eating the bubble gum from packs of baseball cards? Which of these was the real story?
Wow. All three of them sound so very compelling.
Compelling, I think, is the word. Yeah.
Yes.
I think I'm going to go with the second story.
You're going to go with the second story, Charlie's story?
Yeah.
The one about the guy selling his blood. Any particular reason?
No.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, we actually were lucky enough to speak to the person whose life was saved. Here we are.
I've been donating this blood in order to get past this ticket, and when it was determined that I had this blood disease, it was just a revelation that actually the Packers, they saved my life.
That was Jim Becker, the season ticket holder for the Green Bay Packers, who found out that his habit of selling his blood saved his life. Congratulations, Charles. You did get it right. You've earned a point for Charlie for telling you the true story, and you've earned our prize. Carl will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell all the people across the USA, I love my Green Bay Packers, who won the first Super Bowls ever played. I love my Green Bay Packers.
And now the game where we like to ask accomplished people about something they don't know anything about. It's called Not My Job. So it was St. Patrick's Day this last week, and if you went out to celebrate, or in most places, if you just opened your window, you probably heard some Irish music. And if so, then you most definitely heard the Chieftains, the greatest traditional Irish band now recording. Paddy Maloney founded the Chieftains 48 years ago. He is still playing his pipes. Paddy Maloney, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Wonderful. Great to be with you all.
I'm so excited. Well, tell us how you celebrated St. Patrick's Day this year.
Well, I was in New York, and we had a big concert at the famous Town Hall.
So is it traditional for the Chieftains then to tour the U.S. every spring for St. Patrick's Day?
Yes, we do. Yeah, normally we would have started in January. I'm trying to calm things down a bit. It's getting tough. But we've just finished about 5.5-6 weeks of tours, starting out on the West Coast, and we had Roy Cooder with us. We had a great Mexican band called Las Anzongles, and those lovely girls in their beautiful costumes dancing and mixing it, incidentally, with our dancing as well, the Irish dancing and the Mexican dancing. You wouldn't believe how well it came together.
I'm imagining somebody step dancing very quickly around a sombrero on the floor. But no, I want to ask you about your record, but I do want to ask you, you've spent all these St. Patrick's Days in America as an Irishman, born and bred. Is the American version of St. Patrick's Day a little weird for you?
I mean, oh, Ernie Mac. I mean, it's over the top completely. I remember coming in 69, you know, and seeing all this green everywhere. I just could not believe it, because back home, St. Patrick's Day is always when I was a child, it was a holiday, and a church holiday, and you went to Mass, and then you wore the shamrock, and you went to a big Irish football game afterwards, and it's just like a Sunday, in fact, and the pub's only opened up for 1 hour. So that wouldn't work over here, let me tell you.
No, it wouldn't. No. Let me ask you to compare. Do the shamrock shakes here taste as good as they do back home?
Well, thank God I've managed to avoid all
really?
That kind of stuff.
That's right. You've stuck to the beer like a good Irishman. So let's ask a little bit about the history of the band. I've been listening to the Chieftains for a long time, but I didn't know you went back. You founded the band 48 years ago.
Right. Even going back into the late 50s, when I started to think about putting the sound together that, eventually achieved with the first album in 62, And we've been going ever since. You know, we never got sense, and people are devils for punishment, as I said.
I understand, but you've put out like 40 albums over the years, somewhere.
48 altogether now.
48.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how do you? Because you play at least your core of your music is traditional Irish music. Is that fair to say?
Traditional Irish music. I mean, we made about 25, 26 of them, and then you know we started to appear. You know, Paul McCartney in 72 asked me to do some backtracking on one of his albums, then Mick Jagger, some sort of stuff like that. And then I made The Long Black Veil, which became quite famous.
Well, it's
with
a great record.
Sting and The Stones.
Speaking of your collaborations, we put out on our Twitter feed, which is Wait at Twitter, we asked people what they wanted to ask you, and a number of people wanted us to ask you, who did you like collaborating with more, Mick Jagger or The Muppets?
Do you know, Mark Knopfler and George Martin, it was The Muppets that I did that piece, and I thought that was absolutely great, you know, with the, you know, I play this whistle and these guys start to bop up and down and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was terrific. But Jagger has been an old friend of mine since the 60s.
And, really?
And when
really?
He was knocking around with Marianne Faithfull in those days, and he came to, you know, Ireland quite a bit and spent some time
that was the most laden little private laugh I've ever heard in my life. We wanted to ask you because like this was St. Patrick's Day this week and we celebrated all things Irish. But as I said, our version of Irishness, Irish culture, is a little odd. So
yeah.
He was a genuine Irishman, an Irish cultural ambassador. Wanted to ask your opinion about a couple of things that are very popular here in America.
Right.
See if you even know about them. For example, Irish spring soap. have you heard of it? Do you use it? And do the girls like it too? That's our question.
Irish spring is the only soap you have to take a knife in the shower.
I know. We've always wondered about that. Lucky Charms cereal, is this a traditional Irish food? We don't know.
Lucky Charms cereal.
Yes, sir.
Holy heaven, that'll move you, all right.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, do you have them in Ireland?
We certainly don't, thanks be to God, no.
No.
I mean, the stuff they go on with over here is unbelievable.
Hey, Patty, we have one last question for you before we play our game, and that is this. We've had this thing, we've been doing a survey of the musicians who've been appearing on our show. We've been asking them a simple question. Which is the sexiest instrument? For example, Branford Marsalis said it was the saxophone. Weird Al Yankovic said it was, big surprise, the accordion. So, Patty Maloney of the Chieftains, what, in your opinion, is the sexiest instrument?
I might be terrible and cutting my own throat here, but the instrument I play, the Ilion pipes, you know, it wraps around you.
Yeah.
And it's like an octopus.
It is. It's very embracing.
I often call it the octopus. And so, that's something that gets every party moving, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is that just sexy? Is that sexy for women watching you play it, or just sexy for you to be playing?
Well, I never got around to asking that question.
You don't need to when you're playing that.
One of the things I do have on my knee, which is essential, is called a popping strap.
A popping strap?
Yeah, popping strap.
Woo.
So you have the chanter in your hand and you're bouncing it up and down.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of the way you play it.
Oh, talk real slow.
Plus, of course, the Ilion pipe has an air bladder, and what's more sexy than that?
and a bellows in case you run out of wind. You know?
That's
I don't have to blow anymore. I have to, you know, the Irish are very clever.
Really?
We invented the bellows, pump the wind into the bag, and you squeeze the bag, and hopefully out she comes.
I think we're able
I think
to say you win.
Life.
You win the contest. The Ilan Pipes, the world's sexiest instrument. Well, Patty Maloney, we are so delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game that we're calling...
You may be an Irishman, and you may fight, but the fighting Irishmen are from Indiana.
Oh, right, from Notre Dame.
From Notre Dame. March, for you, March is about St. Patrick's Day. For us, it's about March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament. So we're going to ask you, in honor of that, three questions about college mascots across our country. To get two out of these three questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is musician Patty Maloney playing for?
He is playing for Cassie Garcia of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay. First question for you, sir.
Yeah.
Mary Baldwin College in Virginia sends its teams to the basketball floor led by what? A, Gladys the Fighting Squirrel. B, Bobo the Bonobo. Or C, Mary Baldwin, the very tough woman.
I'd go along with Mary Baldwin.
Mary Baldwin, the very tough woman.
I'd love to tackle her. Sometime.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mary Baldwin College led by Mary Baldwin, the very tough woman. Actually, it's Gladys the Fighting Squirrel is the mascot at Mary Baldwin College. It's a squirrel because the animal in the historical Mary Baldwin's crest was a squirrel, and it's a squirrel because that was the animal in
Happy Bob's Days.
Happy Days. Great. Nobody knows why it's called Gladys the Fighting Squirrel. All right, you have two more chances. Next question: Whittier College in California has an unlikely mascot in that it does not seem very aggressive. What is it? A, a poet. B, a giant sloth. Or C, an earthworm.
I would have thought the poet.
You would have thought the poet? You're right. It's a poet. The Whittier College Poets.
Good, good, good.
Because the college is named after John Greenleaf Whittier, the poet. Last question, Patty. You get this right, you win our prize. Sometimes mascots run into trouble. The University of Mississippi has decided to replace its mascot, Colonel Reb. It has unfortunate connotations of rebellion. One of the leading candidates to replace him via student vote at the university is whom? A walking bong.
A what?
A bong, which is a kind of water pipe, often used for the smoking of marijuana.
Oh, very good.
So
very
when you
good.
Were knocking around with Mick and Marianne?
You didn't notice any.
What was that thing in the corner?
Yeah. B, is it B, Admiral Akbar, a character from the Star Wars movie?
It's a trap!
It's a trap, thank you. Or C, Paula Abdul.
Please, God, make it Paula Abdul.
So, I don't know. Maybe that strikes me as something I'd like to go with.
You want to go for Paula Abdul? That the students want Paula Abdul to lead them?
Yeah, that would be my choice.
You think Paula Abdul will be willing to do this, to give up her flourishing career as a crazed shut-in?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Paul, you know?
Well, so many people would, although not as many as Paula would like, apparently.
Mm. Anyway, we missed out on that, did we? Yeah.
Yeah, you did, sadly. Yeah. It's Admiral Akbar from Star Wars. You remember him? He's the commander. He looks like a walking fish, and he's a rebel commander, see? Other students threaten to quit the school if the admiral wins the vote. Carl, how did Patty do in our quiz?
Well, Patty needed at least two correct answers to win for Cassie Garcia, but he had just one.
Oh, my heavens. Oh, God. Well, we have to try again sometime.
We will, Patty. Yeah. We'd love to have him. Maybe next St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Patty Maloney is the founder of the Chieftains, the greatest Irish band going. Their new album, which is a wonderful combination of Irish and Mexican traditional music, is called San Patricio. It's amazing. Go pick it up. Patty Maloney, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Patty.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care, Patty.
You all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl won't let a little congestion stop him from reading limericks. He'll just plug in his Vaporimeser.
Oh.
I'm so glad they check you all for weapons at the door. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Faith, this week the New York Times reported a growing trend among couples. Turns out more and more they're fighting not at home, not even in restaurants, but where?
Gosh, online? On their Facebook pages?
On
their Facebook walls?
On their Facebook walls. So you pay bills online? Yeah, on Facebook. You pay bills online. You shop online. Now you can sink into a pattern of passive-aggressive mutual loathing online. The Times says old standards of privacy are breaking down with the rise of social networking. And this way, couples say, at least both sides of the story are out there. It's as easy as a status update. Jane is wishing somebody would just once take out the trash. Bob is just trying to watch the game here. Jane is thinking how it's funny how some people believe it when you tell them it happens to all guys. Bob is no longer in a relationship. One Facebooker said to the New York Times, quote, "A lot of people aren't with us if we have a fight at home. This way all our friends can comment on it." They want that.
Oh, my God. It's like the marriage
it's
ref.
Like the marriage. It's like a marriage
but
ref.
Better. But better.
It's like a marriage ref, but this one won't destroy an entire broadcast network.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. Paul, the celebration of St. Patrick's Day this week reminds us that many in Ireland are sick and tired of the stereotypes people have about the Irish. In fact, last week a team in Ireland opened a museum to rehab the image of one particular sect of Irish society. Whom?
The Druids.
Close, but no cigar.
The alcoholics. The famous Irish. Famous.
No, he said one particular sect. He didn't say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Listen.
No, I mean, you're like much like druids, they are magical.
This
smaller.
The leprechauns?
The leprechauns, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Dublin's $6.8 million National Leprechaun Museum wants to re-educate people about leprechauns.
Oh, the original, look, there it is.
Exactly.
Right down there.
The original leprechaun comes from 8th century Irish folklore, and it's a far cry from the cute little guy where, you know, saying top of the morning on your St. Patrick's Day card.
Or on your cereal box.
Exactly. Turns out the original leprechaun, or the OL, as they like to call themselves, was a sometimes sinister magical creature. For instance, the 8th century leprechaun's Lucky Charm cereal was also magically delicious, but instead of having pink hearts and yellow moon marshmallows, it was filled with actual hearts and rat poison. And the legend went, if you managed to catch him at the end of a rainbow, he would give you syphilis. Paul, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey has an emergency broadcast system to notify citizens of dangers. It's broadcast from a pier and can be heard for miles. There are sirens followed by verbal instructions. They've been testing it. It's a great system, except for one little flaw. What?
It's not in English.
Well, nobody really knows what language it's in.
I need a little more of a hint.
Well, the first mistake was hiring a teacher from Charlie Brown's school to read the instructions.
So it's unintelligible?
Yes, no one can understand what the heck it's saying. Suppose you're down in Chelsea, say, you hear a siren, and then you hear this loudspeaker announcing, danger, there's a in the area. Whatever you do, do not.
They got the same woman that does the subway
exactly,
announcement.
Apparently.
Next stop.
She had union seniority, so they had to use her. Once the problem was identified during a test of the system earlier this week, Port Authority authorities were quick to repair all the faulty speakers, but the damage was done. The boy had cried wolf, as it were, and no one paid any attention to the warnings when New York was attacked by the giant monster from the sea called Rouge. It just had to be that one. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link at our website. That's npr.org/WAIT-WAIT. While there, you can check out our blog, be fed by our Twitter feed, and find information about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago or our upcoming show in Colorado Springs on May 6th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Judy Brim from Sacramento, California.
Judy Brim. That sounds like a lovely name, Judy Brim.
Thank you so much.
Now, what do you do there in Sacramento?
I am a special education teacher.
Oh, I see. You're working with kids who need your help. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
A little burned out, Judy?
No, not at all. I was just thinking about what you said.
Judy's one of those really good people.
I know.
Oh, please.
Wow. Judy, welcome to our show. Carl Castle right now is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
I am.
Here is your first limerick.
We men are not boisterous Thors when we take out the trash and scrub floors, but when we mop and dust without making a fuss, there's no credit for doing the
chores.
Right. After years of complaining about having to help with the housework, men have changed their behavior. Now they're complaining they don't get enough credit for the housework they do. According to research by the Dove Corporation, 60% of the men they questioned said their efforts go unnoticed by their spouses. Men point out that as modern, liberated co-parents, they spend dozens of hours a week updating the inventory of all the cable channels. They create interesting artworks by perfectly balancing dishes in the sink. And they are constantly cleaning out the history in the internet browser. So, why can't we get a little credit?
I think they also curate the condiment selection in the refrigerator.
And one of my jobs is I clean out the refrigerator by eating everything, no matter how disgusting it may be.
That's one of
my jobs. I'm kind of like a goat around the house. All right, here is your next limerick.
From noon to four, Spain fills the gap by resting in Morpheus's lap. Now laws play their part to call it high art when after our lunch we all
nap.
Yes! In an effort to preserve Spain's cultural heritage, authorities in Madrid are calling for the traditional afternoon nap, known, of course, as the siesta, to be given special high status as art, much like historical monuments or bullfighting in that country. Said one siesta advocate, losing the tradition could lead to, quote, the demise of the country, unquote.
Spain. I am so with it.
Aren't you, though?
Totally.
Spain's cultural ministers are currently exploring the proposal at the Siesta Museum, known to many as the Madrid Holiday Inn.
So, if we put in a moderately insurance-friendly healthcare system, our country will fall apart. If the Spanish stop napping, their country will fall apart.
I know.
They're smarter than we are.
Yeah, apparently.
The siesta is fantastic.
The siesta is a great tradition.
Italy has it, too. They don't call it the siesta. What do they call it? I don't know. But it's great.
Thursday.
In France, they have the 5-7. That's when you meet your lover from 5 to 7.
France is also good.
Here is your last limerick.
Here in Italy, we had it to chase Crook. And for him, we did it in every place, look. But then we save a time by going online to check out his profile on
Facebook.
Facebook, yes.
Bellissimo.
Facebook is no longer just a medium for posting party pictures and stalking your ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend. Italian police used Facebook to track down one of the country's most wanted mafioso, Pasquale Manfredi, 33, may excel at drug trafficking and murder, but he is not apparently very good at working Facebook's privacy settings.
He's one of my top friends.
There you go. By following his status updates, hiding out, the police were able to track him to an apartment in southern Italy where he was caught unawares tending his virtual wheat fields in Farmville.
Actually, I was with him in Mafia Wars.
Yeah,
he was really good.
No, he gave that up. He says he felt like taking his work home with him, you know? Carl, how did Judy do in our quiz?
She was a good, Peter. Perfetto, perfetto. She had three correct answers, so Judy, you win our prize.
Judy, thank you so much for playing. That was great.
Grazie.
She does dialect humor.
I love it.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for playing.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer is now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Charlie Pierce and Paul Provenza each has 3 points. Faith Saley has 2.
All right. Faith, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. President Obama announced plans this week to overhaul the education law known as blank.
No Child Left Behind?
Right. On Thursday, former President Jimmy Carter called the current efforts to bring peace to the blank feeble.
Middle East.
Right. According to a report by the Congressional Budget Office, the blank bill will reduce the federal deficit by over $100 billion over 10 years.
Health bill.
Right. Healthcare. Yes. As stocks plunged, former video rental giant blank announced that it may file for bankruptcy.
Blockbuster.
Right. A North Carolina teacher is in trouble after writing blank on a sixth grader's test.
Loser.
Exactly right. Minus 20% for being a loser is what she wrote. Report released this week shows that New York blanks overcharged customers $8.3 million over the past 2 years.
Taxi drivers.
Right. A police officer checking traffic speeds in Chattanooga felt his car shaking and got out to find blank.
A paratrooping bear in it.
No. Bear from above. No. What he found, this cop, was a bulldog in the process of chewing his tires off. Officer Clayton Holmes tried everything from pepper spray to tasers, but the dog still managed to chew off 2 tires and the entire front bumper before officers could capture him.
It ate a car?
It ate a half a car. Holmes said he was glad the damage wasn't even worse and that he would never, ever take the Bacon-mobile out on patrol again.
Were they driving?
No, he was
this?
Sitting still.
Oh,
he was,
right.
You know, with his gun, checking traffic with his speed gun, and all of a sudden the car started shaking, and it got out, and there was the crazed bulldog.
You know what? Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Faith do in our quiz? Pretty well, I think.
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Faith has the lead.
We have flipped a coin. Paul has elected to go second. Here we go. Fill in the blank. In a Rose Garden ceremony Thursday morning, President Obama signed the $18 billion blanks bill into law.
Finance reform.
No, jobs. That
That's
not
what
done
I meant.
Toyota announced that it found no evidence to support a California driver's account of a runaway blank.
Prius.
Right. For his second March Madness bracket while in office, blank went with Kansas to win it all.
Barack Obama.
Right. 2 IRS agents raided a car wash in California this week demanding that the owner pay his delinquent taxes in the amount of blank.
Ooh. I don't know.
Pass. 4 cents. In what is believed to be the biggest recording deal ever, the estate of blank signed a contract
Michael Jackson.
With Sony for up to $250 million, right? According to a Rasmussen Reports survey, only 20% of Americans planned to blank to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Drink.
Right. An entire block of Yuba City, California was shut down when a woman left a box of her favorite cabbage on her friend's doorstep and labeled it blank.
Labeled it explosive.
Yes, close enough. She said, the bomb is what it said.
The bomb.
Terry Talbert. Because Terry Talbert, the woman in question, wanted to communicate just how good that cabbage was. I.e., that cabbage in this box is the bomb, baby. When the friend arrived home, instead of making a delicious soup, she called the bomb squad. An embarrassed Talbert said she would never do that again, and to apologize, she sent the local police force all of her old heavy metal CDs and labeled the box Lots of Anthrax. Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, but Faith still has the lead with 14.
All right.
Ooh.
So how many, then, does Charlie Pierce need to take it away from you?
6 correct answers.
Here we go, Charlie. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. This week, people across the country began receiving the 2010 blank forms in the mail.
The census.
Right. In an effort to push his vision of health care reform, this week, blank sat for an interview with Fox News.
Barack Obama.
Right. Colleen LaRose, the Philadelphia woman, also known as blank, pleaded not guilty to terrorism charges this week.
Jihad Jane.
Right. This week, Britain's Metro newspaper featured what they say is probably the world's first blank.
Naked picture of Queen Elizabeth.
No, the world's first surfing alpaca.
Oh.
A torn Achilles tendon will keep celebrity soccer player blank out of the rest of the season and the World Cup.
David Beckham.
Right. Best known for his roles as Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone. Actor blank died at age 85.
Fess Parker.
Fess Parker, indeed. During the White House's St. Patrick's Day celebration, Joe Biden mistakenly blanked the Irish Prime Minister's mother.
Killed her.
No. Well,
declared her dead.
Declared her dead, yes. He eulogized her is what he did. The eulogy would have been a nice gesture if Prime Minister Brian Cowan's mother was not still alive. Something Biden seemed to realize halfway through the statement. Biden said, quote, his mom lived in Long Island for 10 years or so. God rest her soul. Although she's, oh, wait, your mom's still alive. It was your dad who passed, unquote. Biden quickly recovered from the gaffe, complimenting Cowan's mother by saying she looked really good for someone so old. Carl.
Doesn't she look like herself?
Yeah. Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
Charlie needed 6 correct answers, and he had 6 correct answers.
Well done!
So 15 points. Charlie Pierce is this week's champion.
Well done. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will be the big story out of Tiger Woods' return to golf at Augusta National. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes prefinished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. The George Lucas Educational Foundation, providing schools that work, strategies for 21st century success. Learn more at edutopia.org. And Mini, featuring the 37 mile per gallon Mini Cooper with go-kart handling. Learn more at miniusa.com/info. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Christine Fiedler. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Shillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White, the senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will happen at the Masters when Tiger returns? Charlie Pierce.
Tiger, as we know, will be playing Augusta National, but in an ironic twist, his friend, famous local entertainer and National Augusta, will not be on hand.
Paul Provenza.
Well, after all his therapy, he's just going to be playing the same hole. Just going to stick with one hole for the whole game.
And Faith Saley.
Tiger's wife, Elin, will be his caddy. Clubs will be in his bag. His balls will be in her purse.
Well, if Tiger Woods does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Paul Provenza, Faith Saley. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.